Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 219. And last time we were with the frogs, so we're going to continue here in chapter 7, in verse 27. Moses is telling Pharaoh, "And if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite all your borders," that is the whole land, and that included, tragically for the Israelites, also the land of Goshen, "with frogs, and the river shall swarm with frogs," and everybody depended on the river for livelihood, "which shall go up and come into your house and into your bedchamber and upon your bed and into the house of your servants and upon your people and into your ovens and into your kneading troughs." In other words, you are not going to be able to escape them. They're going to be everywhere. And something about the frogs, you see, God is, in essence, bringing all this punishment and destruction on the gods of Egypt. They worship those creatures. They held them in great reverence and high esteem. And so now he's going to accomplish something else, because as long as there are a few frogs, you know, you can worship them. But when they are all over the place and they make your life miserable, you begin to develop a different attitude toward them. And so in essence, he wanted them to get to the point where the frogs will be contemptible in their sight. And so that's another way of destroying their reverence for worshiping frogs. And so that happened also for the children of Israel, and who were also idol worshippers. Because many of them were, not that all of them were, but God in essence made it very plain that while they were in Egypt, they were idol worshippers as a whole. And so all of them are going to learn lessons, both the Egyptians and the children of Israel. And so this is what Moses is telling him in verse 29, "And the frog shall come up upon you and upon your people and upon all your servants." Nobody's going to escape it. And all of them are going to have to learn lessons. Even though some of them might be a little bit more humble than Pharaoh, yet on the other hand, they're all worshippers of these frogs, which in essence are a replica, in essence, of the physical replica of the spiritual, which is the angels that became, well, some of these angels are frogs, you know, in other words, they are in the form of frogs, because the animals were created in the image of the angels, and man was created in the image of God. And so that's in essence not only destruction of the frogs, but those who are behind them in terms of the respect and reverence they are going to have for them. And so it has a double meaning here for that purpose. And so in chapter 8, now God is speaking to Moses, and the Lord said unto Moses, "Say unto Aaron, stretch forth your hand and your rod over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools." And so everywhere they had water, it was going to be filled, just like before that, with blood. Now it's going to be filled with frogs. And cause frogs to come upon the land of Egypt, and upon stretched out, and Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did in like manner with their secret arts, and brought up frogs upon the land of Egypt. Imagine that. Again, you know, the power that God had given even to demons here to be able to do it, and he did not withhold them from doing it. And that's in essence one reason why people were idol worshippers, because demons are involved in their worship, and therefore all kind of things happen, and so people are convinced. And since God is not generally in the business of manifesting himself in visible ways, but the demons tend to do so, therefore people are more prone to worship demons than worship God. And God did not withhold that power from the demons to be able to do it. Again, you know, this scenario that is happening here tells us an awful lot about the power of demons and what God allows them to do with mankind. And that's the reason why there are several laws that God gave his people, for them to shy away totally from anybody who is engaged in astrology and sorcery and anything that has to do with this dark world. And the children of Israel, unfortunately, were very much into it. And they are, to this very day, very much into it in so many ways. A lot of people are today idol worshippers, demon worshippers, and they don't even know it. I think just, you know, simple reading of cards and seances and the like. Well, this is what God was doing there. And the people were learning lessons through that. And that's, in essence, how God corrects mankind. But those experiences that it brings upon them and causes them to abhor and to despise sin, to see what it does to them, and therefore to turn away from it. And many Egyptians actually did and they came to the camp of God, and they joined the children of Israel and came up with them, and were standing there before Mount Sinai. And so here the magicians are able to do the same. So they can do the serpent, they can do the blood, and they can do the frogs. And then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, entreat the Lord that he take away the frogs from me. Now the magicians, that is, the sorcerers, they could bring through their dark arts, in other words, black magic, in other words, demonism, using the power of demons. And we're going to see a great manifestation of that at the end time, where the devil, and God is going to allow him, and his demons, are going to actually give men the power to do an awful lot of signs and wonders and miracles, that the very elect are warned. If they're not going to be the very elect, they too might be deceived, because they're going to see tangible things, you know, facts. So they would think that those people are people of God. And so the whole world is going to be taken by it. Well, here the magicians were able to do it, but they were not able to get rid of it. And only God could. For the simple reason, God did not give the power to the demons to be able to do it. So he limited their power there, but he allowed them to be able to create this plague of the frogs also, to duplicate it. And so Pharaoh, recognizing that, is pleading with Moses and Aaron to entreat with the Lord that he take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go. This is the first time that he mentions that. I'm going to let the people go. Up to now, he was not even willing to consider that. Apparently, he got to the point where he got so sick and tired of that, you see, and despised, you know, all those frogs. So there goes one god of Egypt, and all he and all of his people, and all of his servants, that he was willing to do it. And so, in verse 5 we read, and Moses said unto Pharaoh, have you this glory over us? Against what time shall I entreat for you? In other words, you know, you're going to see that we're in total control. In other words, our God is in total control. And when you're going to see it, you're going to really acknowledge that. And that's in essence what this terminology is. And he says, at what time do you want me to do it? And so it says, at what time shall I entreat for you and for your servants and for your people that the frogs be destroyed from you and your houses and remain in the river only? So he said, you know, just in case, we're going to leave some of them in the river. And that was bad news, but it was better than have it all over the place. And he said, Pharaoh, that is, against tomorrow. And he said, in other words, be it according to your word, that you may know that there is none like unto the Lord our God. So you've got all your frogs, you know, which are representative of a god, and all the other creatures. You see, all of those are not really gods, and you're going to learn that one after the other. Many times God is going to teach you this lesson until you get it through your, you know, thick head, you and all of Egypt and all the children of Israel. And that's in essence what God is doing here. And the frogs shall depart from you and from your houses and from your servants and from your people. They shall remain in the river only. So he's reminding him of that. I'm not going to bring you complete deliverance, because obviously he knows what Moses is all about. That is Pharaoh. And Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto the Lord concerning the frogs. And the word here for cried, it's literally, the literal cry that people utter. And generally it's a very intense cry. And this is what he does here concerning the frogs, which he had brought upon Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the courts, out of the fields, and they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stunk. So they still had to suffer an aftermath of the penalty. Okay, they're all dead. They're not going to, you know, climb and jump all over you, but they're going to be around, and you're going to have to get rid of them. In the meantime, you're going to smell the stench, and that's going to totally, in your eyes and mind, develop that attitude of contempt for that supposed God that you had. And so God continues, you know, the pressure there on Egypt, on Pharaoh, and on Israel likewise. But when Pharaoh saw, verse 11, that there was respite, he hardened his heart. It doesn't say here that God hardened his heart. It says he hardened his heart and did not listen to them as the Lord had spoken. Because God knew what is in the mind of Pharaoh. And obviously at the same time, You know, whatever chief demon is in charge of Egypt is working with him. And so you have that also behind the scenes happening there. The hardening of the heart happens because that's the nature of Pharaoh, that's his arrogance, and the arrogance of many of those around him, the Egyptians, and that's also the intervention on the part of demons, of Satan himself, and also God is allowing that or causing that, and so you see a complex situation there. And the Lord said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, stretch out your rod, because, you know, he hardened his heart and he's not going to listen. Okay, there comes the next one. So stretch out your rod, he says, and smite the dust of the earth, that it may become gnats throughout all the land of Egypt. Now the frogs were big, you know, you could pick them up and throw them away, but what are you going to do with those tiny little creatures? So you see an intensity there of the plagues, which are going to affect Egypt more and more, and Pharaoh, and put the pressure on them, and in the process also cause them to despise their own gods. And so we read in verse 13, and they did so, and Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and smote the dust of the earth, and there were gnats upon men and upon the beasts. All the dust of the earth became, imagine that, the dust became gnats throughout all the land of Egypt. In other words, lice. And the magicians did so with their secret arts to bring forth gnats or lice, but they could not. So at this point, the magicians are not able to do it, because at this point, God is not allowing the demons to give them that power, and He Himself prevents it, obviously. So again, you know, you see that God is in absolute charge, no matter what the demons do, what power, you know, they are given, or He allows them still to be able to use some of the powers they had. He is in absolute charge. He determines how far they go, and at this point, it says no more. So now He's going to show Pharaoh that he is really in absolute charge and has charge over all of his gods, over all the demons that he was worshipping. And he was going to teach also Israel likewise. And the magicians did so with their secret arts to bring forth lice, but they could not. And there were lice upon man and upon the beast. And so everybody was really suffering, not only the animals, that is, not only Pharaoh and his servants, the people, but also the very animals. So everybody was miserable. And the animals also were creatures that they themselves worshipped, you see. And that's the reason why they developed that attitude, because of that, believing that those animals are representative of gods. They developed the attitude that anybody who is a shepherd, you know, that works with animals, is an abomination in their sight. You know, they had contempt for the shepherds. That was one reason why the people of Israel were placed in Goshen, you know, more or less away from the people of Egypt, so they can continue to be shepherds. And at the same time, that was the reason why Moses was telling Pharaoh, look, you know, we're going to worship God, we have to sacrifice us, and we certainly cannot do it in the sight of the Egyptians, you see, sacrifices, and because they represented their gods. And so God was going to punish those very animals also, who were a part of the same dark world in which Egypt was. Total idol worship, demon worship. And verse 15 we read, then the magician said unto Pharaoh, and that's the first time that they acknowledged that, because they couldn't do it. And so they said, this is the finger of Elohim, the finger of God. In other words, we realize we've got our limits. And there is a God here, you know, there is a deity here that is much more powerful than ours. So that's Him. And there's nothing we can do about it. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened. So instead of listening to it, he's hardening his heart. And he would not listen to them, as the Lord had spoken. In other words, he's not going to acknowledge. And that's in essence what happens to humanity. When they believe in something so much, when they're convicted so much by certain things, doctrines, teachings, whatever it may be, false gods, you see, they're not willing to let go, because that means they totally have to admit error, that they have lived a lie, you see, and that's extremely humiliating for them, especially when a person is in a Pharaoh. He's not about to do that. And the more proud we are, the harder it is for us to admit error. You see, the more we have a depth of conviction, you know, if it is the right thing, that's fine, but if it is the wrong thing, the more difficult we are in terms of conversion. and we're not willing to listen. And that's the reason why God says, you know, that God resists the proud, but He gives grace to the humble. And that was the problem, the major problem of Pharaoh, and the major problem of Satan, the devil, pride. You know, pride causes you to think, well, I know better, nobody's going to tell me that, and certainly you're not going to admit that you are empty and broken, and there is nothing to you, and you're really nobody and nothing. And Pharaoh was not about to admit it at this point, even though he came to realize there's a greater God here, a more powerful one than the ones he worshipped, which makes his inferior. He was not about to admit it. And so, verse 16, and the Lord said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. Lo, he comes forth to the water. In other words, that was the morning ceremony. Come and bless the water. The God of the water, you know, the Nile. And they have a God for that. And later on, God would mention that fact that the Pharaoh, the kings of Egypt, thought of themselves as gods and thought of themselves as if they were the creators of the Nile, because they were sort of impersonating or part of that God that created the Nile. And through the prophets we see that in Isaiah and other places. And so he goes to the water to bless the water, that's a morning ceremony, and also to wash. And so he says, when you see him go over there into that religious ceremony, you send to him, thus says the Lord, thus says Jehovah. And obviously Pharaoh knows Jehovah. You see, that name was very well known by everybody. Though they did not worship that Jehovah, they worshiped their own. He says, let my people go, that they may serve me. You see, not serve your idols, which they are doing, unfortunately. But I want them to serve me, and me alone. Else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies upon you and upon your servants. Now, before that, the lice, you know, they were basically on the ground, and you can scrape them, but flies, you know, they fly in all directions. They get to places where the lice cannot get into, so they make life even much more miserable. And they, in essence, also lay eggs everywhere, so they make the food rotten, you know, and bring much more stench and destruction and great annoyance and misery. And so you see the intensity again of the plaguing. And the fly again, you know, that was one of the gods, not only of Egypt, but of others. You know, the fly god, Zevuv, in Hebrew, Baal Zevuv. You read in later on, in the children of Israel worshipping this very God. And so we see this plague coming upon the flies now. Or that is, bringing the flies. And obviously, you know, when the flies are going to be dead, so the gods of Egypt, in essence, are being put to death too. And so that's what he's saying here. I'm going to bring flies, swarms of flies upon you and upon your servants and upon your people, and into your houses, and the houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms and flies, and also the ground whereon they are. And I will set apart in that day the land of Goshen. Until this point, the people of Israel, mostly unfortunately, being idol worshippers themselves, you know, after all this time they've been in Egypt, and they gave in to that darkness, and forgot the light that they had, and they too had to suffer the punishments that came upon Egypt so far, you know, with the blood and with the frogs and with the lice. But at this point, with the flies, God says, apparently Israel is learning their lessons and God is having mercy on them. And so he says, at this point I'm going to make a separation. And so he says, I will set apart in that day the land of Goshen in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there. In other words, all the others were there. And this is going to happen also in the future, where God is going to allow us to be a part of the suffering humanity, because all of humanity is going to have to learn lessons, and we're going to be partakers of it, because we ourselves still need to learn lessons. And most of Israel, the people of Israel, the physical Israel, obviously need to learn a lot of lessons. Many of them are into that, and we're not going to be totally immune from that. No more than the prophets of God were immune from the calamities that came upon their own nations all the way. You know, they were not totally protected, including, you know, the last prophet, Jeremiah, before the captivity. But, you know, God preserved his life, so to a point he allowed him also to suffer with the rest. And, you know, there has many reasons for that. And the closer we are to God, and Jeremiah was close to God, that was not his problem. But we have to learn to empathize with our own people, learn what they go through, and in the process also be purified ourselves and have total trust in God. You see, it is through much tribulation that we enter into the kingdom. So we have to be willing to suffer along with others and not think that God is going to save our hide totally while all the others are suffering. And, you know, we become arrogant and superior in our own eyes. You see, it's also for our own humility and meekness so that we may also ourselves totally, with all of our being and heart, cry to God and draw very near to Him. You see, for all these reasons, God is going to allow also His people to go through it, as we see here. But to a point. And after that, there is protection. And so that's what we see here. The people of Israel were not going to be affected by it. And so he says, again, verse 18, "And I will set apart in that day the land of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, to the end that you may know that I am the Jehovah in the midst of the earth." You see? I'm the Eternal. All the others are not. You see, they're dead. How can they be eternal? You worship them. You see? You know, they come to life, I bring them to life, and I put them to death. What does that mean? I'm eternal, they are not. You see? That was the point that he wanted to know, make all mankind know. And this is the very statement that you're going to read later on in the prophets. The end time. Where God is going to show all of humanity, because He's going to plague all of humanity with all kind of plagues, including the animals and everything else. And who knows if He's going to repeat the same things that He did here to Egypt. Because a lot of people are worshipping idols and creatures. And he's going to show them he is the only one who is eternal. All their gods are dead gods. You know, they're not even the animals that they worship, even though they are alive. When he sets his hand, you know, to smite them, they're all dead. They cannot protect themselves, and their demons cannot protect them. You know, they are being representative of the demons, which people think are gods or deities. And so the law. This is what God is saying. I want you to know, and everybody. The whole earth should know that I'm the Eternal. None others are. And I will put a division between my people and your people. By tomorrow shall this sign be. And the Lord did so. And there came grievous swarms of flies into the house of Pharaoh and into his servants' houses and in all the land of Egypt. The land was ruined by reason of the swarms of flies, because, you know, they get into everything, you know, everything that people eat and drink and so it spoils everything, so now they are starving. They have no food. And you wonder, how many times do people need to be plagued before they respond? Well, you see the end time. People are going to be, you know, the more intensified the plagues are going to be on humanity, they're going to curse God. Not repent, but curse God. Because they are so much into demonism, and they don't realize it, that they are not going to respond with humility and meekness until they're totally crushed. And that's exactly what's going to happen here. And that's why, you know, the coming tribulation, and after that, the day of the Lord, which is even worse, is going to basically decimate the majority of planet Earth and much of what is upon it, because that's how far men went into demonism, that he's not even capable of repentance. You see, his heart is so hardened. And so, Pharaoh, we read here, called for Moses and for Aaron and said, "Go you, sacrifice to your God." Now he really is plagued by that, very alarmed, very distressed. And so he says, "Go sacrifice to your God in the land." In other words, you stick around here while you do it. And Moses said, "It is not meet to do so. You know, we cannot do so, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God." It's not that they consider a cow an abomination, or a goat or a sheep. You know, they themselves ate those things, but sacrificing them, that was an abomination to them, because those were their gods. Like in India, you don't dare go to India there in the midst of a Hindu population and in the middle of the street, you know, take a cow and slaughter the cow. You see, they'll kill you. That's exactly what he's saying here. So you see here of what you see in India nowadays, still to this very day, is what Egypt was all about, only in regard to everything. And that's what they think. You know, those are reincarnations and ancestors and or deities and all that. So you just don't touch them. And that's in essence what he's saying here. You know, it's gonna, you know, it's an abomination to the Egyptians to do that, to sacrifice to the Lord our God. Lord, if we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, will they not stone us? You see, and if you do it in India today, you're going to experience the same thing. So he tells you, no, we cannot do it in the land. We will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Lord our God as He shall command us. So in essence, the three-day journey is how long it took them when they walked on foot, Moses and Aaron, to Mount Sinai. And this is, you know, the place where we're going to sacrifice. And we're going to do it as He shall command us. You know, we don't even know what exactly we need to do. So at this point, even though Moses knows that really when that time comes, it's deliverance, they leave Egypt, never go back to there, he doesn't need to tell them everything to the Pharaoh. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, the concept of when you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, otherwise you're a dishonest person. This is not a biblical principle. There are times where this is called upon and you really have to do it, you see, but it's not something that you do across the board. You don't have to always tell everything, and you see several examples in the Bible where God Himself required His people not to tell everything, just certain things, and here is one example. You're not lying, just don't tell everything. That's exactly what He said when He came in the flesh. You know, you got to be shrewd as a serpent, harmless as a dove. So you're not, you know, willfully deceiving people and lying to them on matters that you should really be honest about it when they question you about every single thing. Times when you get to a point where they question you specific things, you just don't answer. You see? That's again, you're shrewd as a serpent and you're harmless as a dove. You don't reply. You don't say, or you answer with a question. And you see that Christ doing very often with the Pharisees. When they put Him on the spot and He didn't want to do that, well, today they have the Fifth Amendment. You know, people claim the Fifth Amendment so they don't have to say anything. And this is what He's saying here. And so Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God. So He's willing to give in the wilderness. Only you shall not go very far away. In other words, only you go only into the wilderness. I don't want you to go far, probably not even the 3 days. Entreat for me. So, you know, if you've got the reason that you cannot do it in Egypt, well, go into the wilderness, but not far away. And so that means not even the 3 days. So He's giving in a little bit more every time, but not all the way. And God is not interested in people who give in only a little bit, or even more, or halfway, or even 99%. He wants total, 100%. Your will be done, period. That's all there is to it. Otherwise, we have an idol there in that 1%. And so, verse 25, and Moses said, behold, I go out from you, and I will entreat the Lord that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. And only let not Pharaoh deal deceitfully, because that's exactly what you've been doing all this time. So he's telling him to his face that he's been deceitful all this time. Don't be deceitful anymore in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. You see, that's where he puts it, just to go to sacrifice. Nothing but deliverance coming out of Egypt, you know, taking everything and leaving. Verse 26, and Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord, and the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and he removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, from his people. There remained not one. Imagine that. Not one. And Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also. Again, the demons move in, and people around him move in, you know, being also influenced by demons. And God allows that. And that's in essence what he means when he says, I harden Pharaoh's heart. You see, he's not the one doing it personally. He lets the demons and you know, whisper in his ears. And so that's how it happens. And some people think that, you know, God Himself comes down and speaks to Pharaoh and hardens his heart and does that. And, you know, they don't understand what God meant by that. Now, oftentimes when God, you know, is going to bring a calamity on people, you know, He's not the one doing it. He causes someone, He stirs the spirit of someone, that person goes and does it. And that's what you see here also. You know, when Pharaoh hardens his heart because he listens to the spirit of demons and pride, you know, in people, a spirit of pride in himself and in others, you know, which are used again by demons, and God allows that. He allows the demons to go and do it, so in essence, it's as if God Himself had done it. And so Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he did not let the people go. And therefore, now we read in chapter 9 that God was going to deal with him even more harshly. And we read in verse 1, then the Lord said unto Moses, go in unto Pharaoh and tell him, thus says the Lord God, the God of the Hebrews. So he's now mentioning again the God of the Hebrews, as he mentioned in the beginning. Let my people go. In other words, he's not your God. He's the God of the Hebrews, the people of Israel, that you are holding here captive. He said, let my people go, that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and will hold them still, that is in captivity, behold, the hand of the Lord is upon your cattle which are in the field, and upon the horses, and upon the asses, and upon the camels, and upon the herds, and upon the flocks, there shall be a very grievous murrain. And so this is going to be even a greater punishment that is coming upon Egypt, because now they're very cattle, very animals, horses, you know, and the horses were extremely important to Egypt and to Pharaoh. And God says it's going to destroy them. And this is the next punishment, the plague that is coming upon them. And mind you, at this time, Israel is not going to be affected by it, so all the herds of Egypt that were in the land of Goshen are going to still remain while they are in the land of Goshen, and much of the land of the cattle of Egypt was in the land of Goshen, that is of Pharaoh, and that's going to be protected. But then, the way it's going to end up, Israel was going to end up with all this cattle, not Pharaoh, not Egypt. And so obviously God was not going to destroy that. And so we read in verse 4, and the Lord shall make a division between the cattle of Israel and the cattle of Egypt. So all the cattle of Egypt that is outside of the land of Goshen is going to be affected. And as he already made a division before that, and there shall be nothing that die of all that belongs to the children of Israel. That's again, it's another sign for you to know the difference. I'm the God of the Hebrews, I'm their God, I'm not your God, you reject me, and therefore you're going to be paid a punishment, and all of your gods are not going to protect you. And so God was not going to kill the gods of Egypt. Up to now he was bringing all kind of creatures and then killing them. You see, now he's going to directly bring punishment on the cattle of Egypt and the horses and everything else in terms of killing them, not just spoiling the food of Egypt. And the Lord appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the Lord shall do this thing in the land. And the Lord did that thing on the morrow. And all the cattle of Egypt, all the cattle of Egypt, imagine that, because why? Egypt is not willing to listen to the voice of Moses, listen to the warning, not that every single one of them could have heard it anyway, but at least many of the Egyptians all around, you see, have they not been obedient, had they, you know, been of the same pride and mind of Pharaoh, they too were going to pay the penalty. And so we read here that all the land of Egypt paid the penalty, and all the cattle of Egypt died, but of the cattle of the children of Israel died not one. And that was a miraculous protection, and God made it very plain, as he is in absolute charge of absolutely everything. And nothing was going to be left alive of Egypt, but not single one will die from the cattle of God, because God is going to protect them miraculously, and they're not going to die. And so we read in verse 7, and Pharaoh sent, and behold, in other words, he wanted to see whether that's going to really happen, where none of the children of Israel will have any loss in their cattle. And so he sent, and behold, there was not so much as one of the cattle of the Israelites dead. And that was a very strong, powerful witness to him. But the heart of Pharaoh was stubborn. You see, his heart was stubborn. He was full of pride. He hardened his heart. He listened to the wrong voices. You see, and that's the manner in which, generally speaking, the way that God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. As we mentioned earlier, God is not going to harden the heart of a humble person, of a meek person, of an obedient person, you see. So he's going to use a proclivity anyway on the part of people who are hard-headed to begin with, and stubborn and proud and all that. And that's in essence what he meant about Pharaoh. Because a lot of people look at that, you know, as Paul himself mentioned. Well, you know, if he hardened the heart of Pharaoh, what does he accuse him of, being stubborn or evil or whatever? You know, people like to accuse God. And if he did it, you know, why do you blame me? Why do you blame others? And they don't realize the whole picture properly. And so the heart of Pharaoh was stubborn to begin with, and hard-headed to begin with, and proud and arrogant, you see. And so what God allowed in the process to happen also, in addition to it, is based on the fact that it was already that way. And so he did not let the people go. Verse 8, and the Lord said unto Moses and unto Aaron, take to your hand fulls of soot of the furnace, and let Moses throw it heavenward, that is into the air, in the sight of Pharaoh, And so they went over there, and obviously they're going to either the palace, or if Pharaoh is outside there in the field, whatever it may be, in the sight of Pharaoh, and it shall become small dust over the land of Egypt, and shall be a boil breaking forth with blains upon men and upon beasts throughout all the land of Egypt. So now God is going to get not only to the cattle of Egypt, to the produce of Egypt, you see, it's going to affect the very person of every Egyptian, beginning with the house of Pharaoh. And so they took soot of the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses threw it up. This time Moses is doing it, not Aaron. And Moses threw it up heavenward, and it became a boil breaking forth with blains upon man and upon the beast. So everybody was miserable. You know, the people of Egypt were miserable, and the animals, because they are representative to Egypt of gods, they were miserable. And so they realized their gods are miserable, and that supreme God is inflicting that upon them. And they had no power to protect themselves from that eternal. And the magicians could not stand before Moses because of the boils. So the boils were upon the magicians and upon all the Egyptians, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh. Now at this point we read the Lord is the one doing it, but then again it's because of his stubborn heart and pride and so forth, and he's not going to let that affect him. And so he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had spoken unto Moses. And the Lord said unto Moses, rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say unto him, thus says the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, again he's making that specifically, I am their God, the God of this people Israel that you despise, not your God, I'm the God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me, for I will this time send all my plagues upon your person, and upon your servants, and upon your people, and that you may know that there is none like me in all the earth. Surely now I had put forth my hand and smitten you and your people with pestilence, and you have not, that is, that and you have been cut off from the earth. But in every deed for this cause have I made you to stand, to show you my power, and that my name may be declared throughout all the earth, not only in Egypt, but everywhere, wherever they're going to listen. In other words, he said, you know, I could have destroyed you to begin with, but I raise you in order to be able to see my power, and to know that your gods are not gods, and to know for Egypt and for Israel that the gods they've been worshipping are not gods, you see. So for that reason, it says, I didn't just totally wipe you out from under heaven. So you're going to see it, and those things were recorded, and the world at the time, throughout the entirety of the earth, did know about what happened in Egypt. And they did know about that true God, and who knows what happened on a worldwide basis. How many people were turning to God, or at least seeking Him in one way or the other, maybe even coming all the way to the land, as Moses later on would tell Israel, and all the nations of the earth will see the wisdom that you have, the power that you have, and the fact that God deals with you on a personal basis, and He's a true God, and they're going to come and seek this wisdom. And probably many did, individuals from here and there. Verse 17, as yet exalt you yourself against my people, that you will not let them go. Behold, tomorrow about this time I will cause it to rain a very grievous hail, such as has not been in Egypt since the day it was founded, even until now. And so now he's going to totally wipe out their food supplies. And now therefore send, hasten in your cattle, and all that you have in the field. So in other words, you know, all the cattle that he plagued before that did not mean necessarily everything, because obviously some people just took the cattle and hid them inside, and so they were not affected. Only the ones that were outside were affected. And God, when he meant all the cattle, it was a general term, obviously, and not every single one of them, generally speaking. And so they still have cattle, not many this time, because most of them are dead. And so God still is merciful to them, and shows you also another quality of God in all the punishment that it brings upon people. He still allows them to have a little bit. After all, there are some innocent people there. And so he says, in advance, he tells them, hasten in your cattle and all that you have in the field, for every man and beast that shall be found in the field and shall not be brought home, the hail shall come down upon them, and they shall die. And by this time, God already sees that there are some in Egypt who are beginning to turn away, to believe, you know, that there is a true God here, and to forsake their idols. So he's showing them mercy. And this is the first time that we see that here. And so we read in verse 20 that reality. He that feared the word of the Lord, you see, those who fear the word of the Lord obviously realize that He is true God. He is the true God. Theirs are not. And so now they fear Him. Up to now, you know, apparently they didn't get to that point. He that feared the word of the Lord among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his cattle, and this is talking about the servants of Pharaoh, because they were right there, they saw all those things, the need for sure. And so we read specifically here about the servants of Pharaoh and not necessarily about everybody in Egypt. And so he made his cattle flee into the houses, and he that regarded not the word of the Lord, you know, those who were proud to the end, he left his servants and his cattle in the field. You know, that was the height of arrogance. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch forth your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt upon man and upon the beast and upon the herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down unto the earth, and the Lord caused the hail upon the land of Egypt. So God is the one doing it, and all the proud in Egypt, in essence, were outside. The servants that were outside were just put to death. And all their livelihood, basically, most of it is just gone. And so he said, so we read in verse 24, so there was hail and the flashing up, that is a fire, amidst the hail, very grievous, such as had not been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both men and beast. And the hail smote every herb of the field, and broke every tree of the field, only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were. And you can imagine by that time, a lot of Egyptians that began to fear God, they probably flocked to Goshen, because when Egypt is stricken, people begin to think hard about it and begin to believe the words of God. And some of the children of Israel later on left Egypt. There was a great multitude that came with them. And those probably were Egyptians that came from all over the land, realizing that in the land of Goshen, people were protected. And so by doing so, they were showing also their fear and a measure of humility before God and willingness to fear Him and obey Him. And so that's as we find that in the land of Egypt, no harm came upon the people of Israel. And so only in the land of Egypt, we read in verse 26 again, where the children of Israel were, was there no hail. And obviously there were also Egyptians living among them. And verse 27, and Pharaoh sent, again, he's testing and trying, you know, as if all that happened up to now is not good enough for him. And he called for Moses and Aaron and said unto them, I have sinned this time. This is the first time that he mentions that. He realizes that, what is it that he has been doing all this time? You see, the awareness of sin enters into his mind that he's sinning against the true God, the only God. And so he says, I've seen this time the Lord is righteous. Imagine that. Up to now he was not willing to humble himself to get to this point. Now finally he gets to this point. And he said, the Lord is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. That's quite a major submission on his part. And he was willing to do it. But it's not because he's a humble person, not because he's willing to obey God, that's because of all the punishment that came upon him. But at least that's a good beginning for him. And so it says, entreat the Lord, verse 28, and let there be enough of these mighty thunderings and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. In other words, I'm not going to play games with you anymore. And Moses said unto him, as soon as I am gone out of the city, I will spread forth my hands unto the Lord, the thunder shall cease, neither shall there be any more hail. So the plagues are getting more and more dramatic. And so even the heart of Pharaoh is beginning to melt. And so he says, I'm going to do that you may know that the earth is the Lord's. That includes Egypt. That includes everything, you know. He's not just the God of the Hebrews only in the land of Canaan, but he's the God of the Hebrews and the God of the whole earth. Verse 4, but as for you and your servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Lord. It's not really a true, genuine fear in your heart that leads you to repentance and obedience. You're still, you know, with a good measure of pride in you. And so in verse 31 we read, and the flax and the barley were smitten, for the barley was in the ear, and the flax was in bloom, but the wheat and the spelt were not smitten, for they ripened late. So, in essence, you know, God did not bring a total destruction there. His mercy still is there, in spite of the fury and the wrath and vengeance, and so it's going to be also in the future, as you read in specific in Revelation, where God says, well, don't smite the oil and the wine. And Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh and spread forth his hands unto the Lord, and the thunders and hail ceased, and the rain was not poured upon the earth. Well, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.